Technorama episode 555. We're back.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Where's my mic? There. Can't find my button.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
And we are off to another wonderful good start. Happy New Year, everyone. This is our first Technorama of the new year. And apparently when I hit the mute button, it didn't work. It was supposed to say, Mrs. Williams asked me to come and get an AV cart with an overhead projector. But
yeah,
when I
worked on that line for like an hour. And then you skipped over.
I didn't skip over it. I started saying it and nothing came out. So I hit the mute button like three or four more times and then... Well, anyway, you heard what happened. Welcome to Technorama. Yeah. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. If you're a returning guest, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi. Joining me, as always, is the wonderful, immutable Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good. Immutable? No, I got a cold this year.
Immutable? Means you can't be changed.
Oh, yeah, right. No, you, I can't
despite
be changed.
You had another birthday.
I did. I had a big one. Actually.
Craig reached the big milestone.
Yeah.
The big one.
I made the big 50, but you know what?
Woohoo.
As I posted on Facebook, I'm still going to act like I'm young and stupid.
And I said you're only as old as you act.
That's right. That's right.
Which makes us about 14 or 12 or something.
Yeah. Well, I at least want to be 21. So I think about some alcohol.
No, I'm acting all of 14 as long as I can.
Okay. You're going to stand outside. You're going to be the kid. You're going to be the 50-something-year-old standing outside the door trying to get somebody to buy you some alcohol inside.
See, you have to be young enough to have no sense of fear. That's you just really don't. That's what happened Thursday night. We were at sales kickoff in Las Vegas for ServiceNow, and Thursday night was the big final night party, and they had two venues. We were in Las Vegas, right near the big Ferris wheel. There's kind of a little alleyway that goes down there, and there's some stores and shops and bars and clubs and whatnot. And we had two venues. One was the Yard House. The Yard House. Walked in there. People holding trays full of wine and beer. And when I walk in, the night was still young, so it wasn't very full. I could see the band starting to set up. And I said, this place is going to get loud. It's going to get really loud. And right across the alleyway, we had the, was it the Brooklyn Bowl? Something like that. There was bowling and music and dancing. And I knew it was going to get loud, but at least there's bowling upstairs and downstairs. Mm-hmm. So if you know the area, if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Did a game of bowling. Paying for it this weekend because my back and legs hurt like crazy.
Oh, no.
Those are some muscles Bounce that muscles. You don't exercise often enough. Mm-hmm. And did some karaoke, which doesn't happen too often.
Okay?
Those muscles are okay. Apparently, my coworkers are either very kind or I didn't do too bad. They said it was really good. So I did...
As I say, what songs you did?
Don't Stop Believin' by Journey. We only heard that about 500,000 times on the cruise, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I knew all the words from the cruise. We haven't even talked about that. We've been on the Star Trek cruise with Clint and Elvern and our wives.
I was going to see if you wanted to talk about it just for a few minutes.
We can give them a hint.
If you want to hear about it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if you want to hear about it in detail, you can go to our other podcast, The Topic is Trek. .com and we talk about it for whatever
there
hours.
Yeah, it was
we talk about it for over an hour.
It was a 90-minute show. Well, there were some news topics in there, but we did talk a lot about the Trek cruise. Yeah. Had a lot of fun. If you're interested in going, reach out to Craig because he is the landing party captain, and we can get you some special stuff by being part of our next year's party. So
yeah, I'll get you some Spock ears,
Spock socks. Spock sock puppets.
Right. But no, so real quickly, I mean, we all had a great time, and I got, I convinced my wife to go because it was my 50th birthday this, you know, coming up. And then I was like, I hope I can get Chuck and Clinton to go too. And they both came and their wives, and we knew a couple more people that were on the ship as well. I'd say coincidence, but we knew ahead of time that they were going to be there. And it was great. The shows were great. It was fun seeing the stars, you know, and actors doing different things.
And they were real cool. They were real open, very accessible. Most of them very accessible, and you know, very cool about just saying hi to the fans. The a lot of great new people too that I'm really looking forward to seeing again next year.
Oh, absolutely. And what's funny was, talking about seeing the stars out and about. I didn't bring this up on the Topic is Trek show, but Kim and I were sitting there, and the and Will Wheaton was. Brent Spiner was doing the singing, you know, singing show.
Yes.
And this guy, or Jonathan Frakes, came in late with his wife, I guess. They came in and they went down and got a seat because I happened to see them out of the corner of my eye. And then after they sat down, some guy went down there and got his autograph and stuff while he was, the show was going on.
What?
And he was nice enough. I saw him do his thing and he spoke to him and he kind of turned around like, okay, I'm going to watch this now, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he spoke to the guy and was still friendly with him. But I was like, that was totally not cool. And yeah, I didn't really see anybody or hear anybody going out of their way to say, hey, Tim, give me a selfie, you know, because
right,
you pay for that on the ship. But people weren't doing that. And I thought it was pretty good.
I did get a selfie with Fred Luddy, our company founder, on Thursday.
I saw that.
Yeah. That's a rare treat. We haven't had a chance to get a selfie in years. Had a short conversation.
The second picture where you're handing him $20.
Had a nice discussion beforehand too. So got a couple of projects in the works, but and he's interested in participating in one of them. So I'll let you know more about that as it develops. But look for news on that later this year. All right, shall we do the show?
Let's keep talking.
Friendly banter.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay,
let's do the show.
I think we're jumping right into the history thing. Where's the history music? There it is. On this day in history for January 30th, 2019, this is the 30th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are a whopping 335 days remaining in 2019. It was on this date in 1703 that 47 Ronin, wasn't that a movie with Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Under the command of Oishi, Karonosuke, avenge the death of their master.
And it was 213 years ago today, the original Lower Trenton Bridge, also known as Trenton Makes the World Takes Bridge.
Love that, also known as.
Okay. I had to read that like three times to figure out how to say that. Which spans the Delaware River between Mooresville and Pennsylvania and Trenton, New Jersey, is open.
It reminds me of one of those Bullwinkle things. Tune in next time for... And they give two titles at the end.
Yeah. Or Trenton Bridge or...
Trenton Makes the World Bridge. Also today in 1820, Edward Bransfield sights the Trinity Peninsula and claims the discovery of Antarctica. Look what I found.
It's right here. And also on January 30th, 1826, the Menai Suspension Bridge, what's a bridge day, isn't it? Considered the world's first modern suspension bridge connecting the Isle of Anglesey and the northwest coast of Wales is open.
It was also on this date in 1847 that Yerba Buena, California is renamed, yes, you trivia buffs know it, San Francisco, California.
It's the San Francisco Makes the World Takes... No,
later named the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right. January 30th, 1889, Archduke Crown Prince Rudolf of Austria, heir to the Austro-Hungarian crown, is found dead with his mistress, Baroness Mary Vetsra, in the malaria.
I'm not sure why I put that event in here. I think it was a holdover from an example I was showing somebody.
Example? Okay.
I was showing somebody. I said, look, I made this app to do On This Day in History on ServiceNow, and I think I forgot to uncheck that one.
Is this the project Fred Luddy's going to be involved in?
No. It was 108 years ago today that the destroyer USS Terry makes the first airplane rescue at sea, saving the life of Douglas McCurdy, 10 miles from Havana, Cuba.
And it was also on this date in 1948 that Mahatma Gandhi is assassinated by Nathuram Godse, a Hindu extremist.
On January 30th, 1948... British South American Airways Tudor 4 Star Tiger disappears over their Bermuda Triangle.
Ooh. We didn't go over the Bermuda Triangle on our cruise, I guess.
I think we went through part of it.
Or did we?
Sure, okay. Why not? Let's say we did.
Well, and we lived a tale to tale. So 60 years ago today, MS Hans Hedtoft said to be the safest ship afloat and unsinkable, like the RMS Titanic. I see where this is going. Wait for it. Strikes an iceberg on her maiden voyage and sinks, killing 95 aboard. Lesson learned, don't ever say it's unsinkable.
Right. I'm picturing this ship museum exhibit in the middle of the desert in Phoenix. Look, it's unsinkable. Oh my God, it hit an iceberg and sank.
Clinton says it's a ghost now.
That same date in 1969, the Beatles' last performance on the rooftop of Apple Records in London. The impromptu concert is broken up by the police.
Move along, everybody. Baby. There's nothing to see here.
Baby on board.
Right.
Didn't they do that on The Simpsons? On January 30th, 1975, the Monitor National Marine Sanctuary is established as the first United States National Marine Sanctuary.
Good name.
A little redundant, but okay.
It was also on this date in 1982 that Richard Skrenta writes the first PC virus code, which is 400 lines long and disguised as an Apple boot program called Elk Cloner. Because we need more elks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that wasn't very stealthy, I don't think. Elk Cloner. Anyway, 24 years ago today, workers from the National Institutes of Health announced the success of clinical trials testing the first preventative treatment for sickle cell disease.
It was on this date in 2013 that NARO-1 becomes the first carrier rocket launched by South Korea. Happy birthday goes out of this date to Swedish entomologist and archaeologist Charles de Geer, born on this date in 1720.
And American lawyer and politician, 32nd President of the United States, Franklin D. Roosevelt, was born 137 years ago today.
Wow. Born January 30th, 1914, actor David Wayne.
And Delbert Mann, not to be confused with Delbert the cartoon, American director and producer, was born on the same date in 1920.
American comedian, actor, director Dick Martin was born 97 years ago today.
And Dorothy Malone, American actress, was born on the same date in 1924.
January 30th, 1925 is the birthday of American computer scientist, the man who invented the computer mouse, Douglas Engelbart.
And also turning 91 today is American director and producer Harold Prince.
American actor and author Gene Hackman was born on this date in 1930.
Yeah, and also 82, also turning 82 today. I keep wanting to skip over the turning part. Also turning 82 today is English actress Vanessa Redgrave.
Also running out is our band.
Hey, let me get back in here.
Okay, let's see. There. We flipped the
overtime.
45 over and played it again.
Yeah, we're paying them overtime today.
No, it's the same song on both sides of the record.
Oh, yeah.
Where were we? You did Vanessa Redgrave. American businessman and politician, 46th Vice President of the United States. Dick Cheney was born in the state in 1941.
And also born on the same date in 1948, English mathematician and academic Miles Reed.
He can read for miles. Also turning 68 today, English drummer, songwriter, producer, and actor Phil Collins.
And last but not least, American entertainer Jody Watley, born on this date in 1959.
Wow. She's 60.
Yeah.
That's the way it was on this day in history for January 30th, 2019. But we have birthdays to go. We're going to catch up with all of January since we haven't talked to you since, I think, mid-December. We have January 3rd, Thomas Gideon. January 6th, Steve Tarion. Elvis was born on January 8th. Yes, Elvis is in our birthday list. Lingo from the Britain Yankee on the 9th. Glenn Toller on the 14th. Same as my brother. Ralph Whitfield, a.k.a. Goofy Ralph, is on the 15th. I think we went on a cruise with Goofy Ralph, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh, he was goofy, all right.
Fuffy Frog from Canada, but is now from Thailand. I hope this is close to up to date. That might explain why we haven't seen her at Dragon Con in a while.
Wow, no kidding.
I wonder if Dragon Con in Thailand exists and has different dragons, like the Chinese dragons. Anyway, she's on the 17th.
Yeah, for a parade.
Michael Rabelais, Stingray 42, is on the 21st. January 22nd is the birthday of TAW02294. What is that? Is it a like a meteor, comet number, asteroid? TAW02.
Yeah, it's like one of those designations that NASA gives a new planet.
NGC 2019. Anyway, Kathy Luke from Illinois is on the 23rd, as is Chris Moody from Patio Media Chat. Keith Lane is also on the 23rd. We missed Keith's birthday. He should have been here to celebrate. Oh, man. He's on the 23rd. 24th is Cynthia Fry. 25th is some guy named Craig Stepp. I wish he'd call in or let us know. Will, the computer guy, is on the 26th. Did you see his 10-year Facebook picture?
I did.
That was interesting. He's gotten like the full beard thing going. Mark in Memphis on the 27th. 27th is also Chip Burkhead from the Scotchcast. And on the 29th of January is Sarah P. from NJ, who was born in OK, moved to VA, married Brad P., moved to NJ, and now is back in VA.
What?
That's exactly what
I think
it
I followed
says.
That. I think I followed that.
Oh, that was priceless. Thank you, Brad P. and Sarah P. for putting that in there. That was awesome. Happy birthday to you on the 29th. Oh, we have the February birthdays because it's coming up this week. And we're not going to get back to it for a while. Matt Baum, a.k.a. Racer X. Pittsburgh, PA. Brandon Kirkwold from Minnesota is on the 1st. The 2nd has three birthdays. Gary Lindros, longtime listener, good friend of the show. Chuck Provenzano, a.k.a. Podlurker, a.k.a. Chuck's Evil Twin. Oreo Cookie Monster is our third person rounding out the birthdays on the 2nd. And Ewan Campbell McGregor from Scotland, UK on the 3rd. Happy birthday to all of you. If you want to be on the birthday calendar, if you're watching the video, you can see it right there on the bottom of the screen, chuckchat.com/wiki. Or if you're just listening, go to chuckchat.com/wiki. Get your name on the birthday calendar. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. I'm going to fade this out. Man, I think that's the longest we've ever run that song. If I'd known it was going to be that long, I would have put in the...
Let it go for the whole show.
Yeah, I would have put in the 14-minute version that I have. Phew. We are well into this show. Let's get a news story out there. Would you like to talk about drones and clones of drones and crowds?
Why not?
Okay.
Why not?
Oh, wait, we got to do
just
a news
drone
thing.
Drone on about it.
What kind of news is this? Is this good news?
Yeah, okay. Sort of. This is on your point of view.
That'll do. Go.
Oh, you want me to talk about it?
I thought you said yes. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so a new batch of drone rules may soon allow flying over crowds. I do not know if I agree with this or not, but here we go. Unmanned delivery drones are one step closer to reality. The federal government on Monday released a set of proposals that could see civilian drones fly over crowds and end the need for permits for night flights.
I love that show. Didn't you remember watching that in the 80s?
Night Flights. So currently, that was the video. What video? Night Flights. Anyway, currently the federal... broke me. The Federal Aviation Administration rules that civilian drones can't be flown over people. At least they fall out of the sky and injure unsuspecting people below. We saw that happen.
At Dragon Con.
That makes...
Right.
Me personally, yes, I saw that right out of the front of my truck. That makes it difficult to use unmanned drones for various commercial purposes, including surveying construction sites, making deliveries, and capturing footage for urban areas and for TV networks.
Okay.
I mean, surveying construction sites, I would think there wouldn't be that many crowds if you're trying to survey.
No, but there are people on construction sites. At least they have hard hats, yeah. So if they get hit in the head with a drone, it would be less disastrous. Anyway, what else you got?
Anyway, the proposal was announced by Secretary of Transportation Elaine Cho in Washington and is meant to spur innovative commercial uses for drones. Yes, I can imagine so. This will help communities reap, quote unquote, this will help communities reap the considerable economic benefits this growing industry and help our country remain a global technology leader, Cho said in her speech. I think that's a little dramatic of a statement for drones, but okay. When it comes to flights over people, the FAA suggests three regulatory categories based on drone weight. Small drones weighing about half a pound should be considered low risk and require no restrictions. Meanwhile, drones exceeding half a pound would have to be designed in a way that would not cause severe injury if they're struck person. Like, for example, the drone in this category would not be allowed to have open rotary blades. And they say, cause, you know, lacerating people upon impact would be horrifying. Yeah. And of course, bigger ones, they'll have other restrictions.
I'm kind of surprised that a lot of these drones don't have some sort of cage around the rotor blades. Doesn't that seem surprising to you?
Yeah. There are some, and I've seen them, but yeah, you would think more of them would have it.
Right.
But part of it is portability. So you want to be able to, like the one that the Mavic 2 that they're showing in the picture.
Yeah.
You should be able to fold it up. It almost folds up on itself and you can just put it in a backpack. But if it had a cage on it, you may have to disassemble something or just be bulkier. So that's why a lot of them don't have cages. But I have seen some and they don't, I mean, they look like, I mean, they look fine. They don't look huge, but I can see where it cuts down the portability.
Hmm.
Anyway, you probably see more of them because of these rules, though.
So the article goes on to say, up until now, night flights have been allowed. Operators had to obtain permits. The proposal would do away with the need for permits, providing special testing or training had to be completed. The drones would also have to be equipped with special lighting with visibility for 3 miles. Wow. That could be some
3 miles?
Well,
it's going to tax the batteries on these things.
Maybe, not necessarily. I mean, we put some pretty bright LEDs in Santa's eyes for the parade. They're visible quite readily in the day.
Yeah.
And he gets by on four double A's for quite some time.
Well, I'll tell you, though, and we just talked about briefly, was that I was driving the truck in the parade, and I remember thinking before we even got left, there was a guy screwing around with a drone. I kept thinking, that's not good. I know that I have a friend that does real estate videos with drones. He went through the process and got his permits and I don't know if he gets a license or whatever, but he got, he was trying to stay legal because he's doing this as a business. And I remember thinking about that drone. I thought, he shouldn't be doing that over this because you never know what's going to happen.
Well, sure enough, there's so many people.
Hey, yeah, it went off to the side. Yeah, and that's because there's so many people. It went off to the side and skipped across a couple people's heads and then going over a fence. I'm like, this is exactly what I was foreseeing happening. So
maybe
I don't know if anybody got hurt.
To happen. Maybe you caused it, Craig. It wouldn't have happened if you hadn't thought about it.
Yeah, like Professor Xavier'd it. But anyway, that is exactly the thing. I mean, now, I don't know. I have a problem with the parade. I wouldn't do drones at the parade.
No.
This is going to invite that. This is going to invite that.
All righty. We have some hacks and strange stories coming up, but we're going to take a quick break, a real short break. Be right back with the hacks and strange stories and a remember when. And of course, we have a shout out to our patrons, and we have a new one. So stick around.
Oh, we sure do.
We'll be right back.
Geek Thoughts.
Someday, I'll write the Da Vinci compiler so I can run the Da Vinci code.
This is Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica, and you're listening to Technorama.
I should have put the Michio Kaku one after that one. Because even I can't figure out Technorama. That would have been better placed after the Geek Thoughts.
I have a feeling that that was one of my geek thoughts where I was just kind of grasping.
Most of them are. We were grasping. Like, every maybe, now and then we come up with another one. All righty. Here's one that speaking of old things, you just don't want to deal with. The world's oldest lie detector. You know what the world's oldest lie detector is? Licking
a woman.
Hot metal.
Oh. I was going to say woman. But
the Ayyada, okay. A Bedouin tribe of northeastern Egypt, is the last to practice the bashisha, an ancient ritual used to determine whether a suspect in a crime is innocent or guilty. They have to lick a red hot spoon or rod in the presence of tribal authorities, and if their tongue blisters, they are guilty. If it's left unscathed, they are innocent. Believed to date back to ancient Mesopotamia, bashisha is used by most Bedouin tribes throughout the centuries, but all except the Ayyada eventually abandoned it. The ritual is banned in countries like Jordan and Saudi Arabia, but not in Egypt. Although religious groups in the African country view it as un-Islamic. Oh boy. Considered by many the world's oldest lie detection system, but definitely not the most accurate. Bashisha was used. No, Bisha. I'm saying that wrong. It's B-I-S-H-A'H.
Bishaha.
Bisha. Bisha was mostly used in situations where a crime was committed, but there were no witnesses. Suspects had to lick a heated spoon to prove their innocence. And regardless of the result, the verdict could not be contested. The principle behind Bisha is the lying person is nervous and has a dry mouth, so their tongue would be burned by the hot metal. If they are innocent, they are relaxed, so the saliva in the tongue will protect against the red-hot spoon. However, opponents of the ritual claim that this is not always the case, and the ritual not only causes physical harm to suspects, but often leads to their condemnation, even though they are in fact innocent. Today, the bisha is used as a last resort when parties cannot come to an agreement or when there is no other proof or witnesses available. It's also used as a way of scaring suspects into confessing their crimes. Don't make me lick the spoon, bro!
Yeah. No, I'll say whatever you want me to say.
And bringing unsolved disputes to a close. For example, if a plaintiff accepts compensation for the subjects before the ritual is carried out, there is no need to move on with the bisha. This is considered another weakness of the lie detection system, as some people will accept the blame if it means not having to lick a hot metal spoon to prove their innocence. I think I would pay to get out of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some videos, if you click through the links, if you want to see these people, and some of them do come out unscathed. It's real quick. It's like, psst, real fast. And
yeah, it's like they're
you thought
barely touching your tongue.
Pizza cheese on the roof of your mouth was bad.
I know.
This is way nastier. Way nastier.
I can't believe, I watched the video and I'm like cringing because I'm like, they're having to lick that stupid hot spoon. And who thought of that? He said, you know what? Let's see. Who was the first guy to go, you know what? Make him lick the hot spoon and let's see what happens.
If she weighs the same as a duck, that's what this feels like.
Must be a duck. Oh, that was terrible. I cannot believe that.
And
it's still not illegal in Egypt.
It's still legal in Egypt, although it's un-Islamic. I'm not sure exactly what makes it un-Islamic, but anyway, it is cold and snowing in the Midwest, and I hope those of you who are listening in that area stay warm, stay out of the snow, drive safe, all that good wintry stuff. I moved to Phoenix, so I'm unaffected by that. But we have a story about a city in Russia that has taken some interesting steps regarding snow. Craig, would you like?
I was waiting for you to go and stay out of the paint.
Stay because, out of Pittsburgh paint store.
Yeah. So this Russian city painted the snow white to hide pollution.
At first, I thought it was they painted snow white. It says Russian city thinking, paints snow white to hide pollution. It's like, what about the seven dwarfs?
they got away scot-free. So anyway, I'll tell you, I read the title of this and I thought, did they paint the whole town white? And then I was like, well, sort of. Anyway, so you know you have a serious pollution problem when you have to paint the snow white, not Snow White, just to hide the soot and ash covering it. Authorities in Minsk, a town in Siberian region of Kemerovo. Anyway,
I'm just going to let you fly under here. Fire.
Yeah, Kemerovo. Came under fire after covering a children's snow slide in white paint to make the coal dust from the nearby quarries less noticeable, as people do, right?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, did they ever do this in Wisconsin?
No. The sand just made the snow nice and ugly.
Yeah. Russian media started reporting on about the painted snow situation in Minsk a couple of days ago after a local resident posted posted video evidence on YouTube. In the now viral video, Svetlana.
This is more fun than the Lana, honest day in history.
Shut up. Svetlana Selnina. Sounds good enough. I demonstrated how merely touching the snow with her hands leaves her fingers covered in sticky white substance, which she believes to be water-based paint. She added that parents whose children have used this slide reported that left them looking like Indians wearing war paint. So you will see the stains, it even sticks. I sort of say Sylvania. So Selenia said in the video showing her viscous paint on her fingertips. Apparently, city workers tasked with building the snow slide as a winter attraction for kids could not find any clean snow anywhere around town. So they decided to simply paint the pollution snow instead to cover up the soot and ash from the nearby quarries. You know what? During our event called Christmasville, where they turn the town over to Christmasville, they redecorate downtown and everything, and they have different events and stuff. They do a snow thing, and I got pictures of Harrison doing it a few years ago. But they would blow some snow, and kids would go out there, and you know, I was just thinking it'd be funny to see my local government paint some snow because we can't make any.
Soap chips. What do they used to use in Hollywood? Soap flakes.
Potato flakes.
Potato flakes could be used. Hey, Harrison, go make a mashed potato man.
Yeah, wasn't that on the Brady Bunch? They were doing the potato flakes. Anyway.
Let's do the next story. Right. This one sounds even better.
By the way, what's even better is when they blow that snow and it starts to melt a little bit and you kind of gets a little icy. Then the kids start throwing it around. So, yeah, there's that.
Also from Oddity Central, one of our favorite sites for these stories, pastor uses whiskey to get men closer to God. This sounds like a church I want to check out.
I was going to say that, you know, there's only been times I've had too much to drink and the next day I was praying for relief. So there's that.
I have stories about having too much on Saturday night and then having to teach Sunday school on Sunday morning. Those kids got a lesson in hell, all right.
Oh, God. Oh, make it stop.
We're going to read from our Bibles quietly this morning, kids.
To yourself.
I think I'm going to send this article to my pastor to see what he says. A German pastor thinks he may have found an effective way to approach men in his community, and it involves one of his greatest passions, whiskey. 53-year-old Thomas Eschenbacher, a Franconian pastor from Hammelburg in Bavaria, has long been looking for ways to approach the men and talk to them about God and the Christian faith. Hey, you know, this sounds kind of like what Martin Luther started up. You know, he changed things around a bit. It's not the easiest thing to do, especially in this day and age, but Eschenbacher thinks whiskey may just be the solution to his problem. A big fan of the Scottish spirit, the pastor noticed how easy it was to start a conversation about whiskey during a leisurely whiskey tasting evening with friends and decided to use the same catalyst to get through to men in matters of religion. Oh, so isn't that one of those things you're not supposed to talk to people about, is religion, politics, and sports? Well, let's throw booze in the equation, see what happens. He recently announced...
Hey, I agree with... by the way, there's a lot of people that think that whiskey is the solution.
Right. He recently announced that he was organizing a whiskey retreat for men, and all the 30 available spots were sold out, unsurprisingly, almost instantly. Bible reading events don't really work, but with whiskey, I can reach men. It's a topic that interests them, Thomas Eschenbacher said. This sounds a lot like how they got us to do Bible studies for our church. We call it, What Would Jesus Brew? And we go and we combine a brewing lesson with a Bible lesson. So while the water is boiling, we go and do a little Bible study. Once the water gets up to temperature, you throw in your grains or bag of grains or extract, whatever you're doing. And then you go do some more studying. Then you throw in the hops. So there's these breaks where you can do this stuff. And it works out pretty well. I'm fascinated. And then every couple of months, you get to bottle it and drink it.
Yeah. You go to a Lutheran church, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Down the street, there's a Lutheran church from us. And I always told Kim we needed to go there because in October, they have the Oktoberfest. And they got the tents out in the parking lot. I'm like, hey, that's a church I can get behind.
That's right. It says, during the three-hour whiskey retreat scheduled for January 11th, the pastor hopes to use the Spirit not only to start a conversation about faith, but also help participants slow down their life and reflect on their existence. Take a look at the back of your hand really closely. Quote, our time is so crowded, we always want to clarify everything in 8 hours. A whiskey needs at least 10 years to be good, and so my message is not short-term, Eschenbacher told Bild. 5 different whiskeys will be served during the retreat, 4 from Scotland and 1 from Bavarian, 4 of which will be discussed among the participants and 1 enjoyed in silence. Although Bible passages will be read by Eschenbacher during the 3-hour event, the pastor says that he won't try to force the faith onto the participants. They'll just be a little more open-minded as they're inebriated.
Hmm.
You never know what it takes.
I'm fine with that. I mean, as long as you don't go overboard and people start, let me tell you about God.
Craig, do you have a story to tell?
I got a story to share with you.
Yeah. Look here, Ossifer. Yes, Jesus.
you're
into the pokey.
I'm yes, Jesus? What?
Yeah. That's my drunk conversations. You've been around me, you know.
Yours are more reasonable than most people, surprisingly enough.
Right.
All right. You remember reading Curious George? Who was the guy who...
You stole my joke.
Go for it. Totally what was your joke? What else can you think of when you see a story about a man who dresses up in all yellow? Come on.
I was going to say, Curious George, unavailable for comment. That's what I was going to say. All right.
Curious George is dead by this point.
Yeah, the yellow man of Aleppo has been wearing only yellow for the last 35 years.
I think someone ought to get a hold of the author, H.A. Ray, and see what... he might have grounds for a suit. Oh, bad pun. Oh, I didn't mean that.
A yellow suit? Anyway, this guy, can you... Here, I'm going to read the article, not just to improvise here. Can you imagine wearing only one color every day for 3.5 decades? Abu Zakur, a 68-year-old man from war-torn Syrian city of Aleppo, has become known as the Yellow Man after wearing only yellow for the last 35 years.
Talk about your branding. I thought I had something with the bow tie.
Yeah. So the story of the Yellow Man of Aleppo started on January 25th, 1983, my birthday, when Abu Zakur...
you weren't born in 1983.
No. Just the date. No, I wasn't. Way before that. He made the decision to only wear yellow because his eyes were color, because in his eyes, the color represented love. It's unclear what he did with his old wardrobe, burned it in a fire. But from that day forward, Zakur only wore yellow garments, including underwear, which I'll take his word for that.
TMI.
And accessories like, and like neckties and hats, as well as yellow footwear.
There's even a picture of him with a yellow umbrella.
Yeah, that was the next thing. Even his umbrella and smartphone cover are yellow. Actually, don't they have an iPhone that's yellow? He could get one of those. When he couldn't find something to match his attire, he simply took a bottle of yellow nail polish and painted it different color item to fit his yellow man persona.
His mustache isn't yellow.
It's white. It kind of goes with it, though. Yeah, why don't he put some fingernail polish on his mustache?
What if someone came up to him and said, "What are you, yellow?"
Yeah, right.
I dare he's you. Quoted
I dare you. He says that for the yellow, or for me, the yellow. Should I do it in an Aleppo accent?
Do you even know what an Aleppo accent sounds like?
No. I'm gonna make it up. I do not.
I was stunned that you even wanted that challenge.
I was good. I imagine it sounds kind of like Italian.
Yes, yes. Now I really want to hear what your perceived Aleppo accent sounds like. Right.
The color yellow represents love or something no one other ever has done before, and no one ever in what? I'm not even listening to the words.
I think you've now offended half of the country.
Sorry. That's the way. Hey, do you even know what an Aleppo accent sounds like?
He's from Syria.
Hey, but do you know what that sounds like?
I'm going to go with more of a Syrian thing.
Okay.
Not Italian.
I believe no one in the world can wear yellow for 35 years, day and night. Indoors. Actually, I sound a little more like I'm from New Jersey or something. I don't know.
Imagine someone from like Indiana Jones movie. Will that help? Oh, there was a Spanish overdub version of Raiders on the TV while I was in Vegas. I was flipping channels and came across like, "Hey, it's Raiders." And they were just playing the music as he's about to go in and get the idol, and then I realized,
oh, yeah,
it's Spanish overdubbed. How well do you know the lines?
Oh. Wow. I have to look on. I wonder if that's on Netflix, because sometimes they have. Actually, I do know, because I was trying to figure out what a guy was saying. I was watching The Last Crusade, and I noticed that it had German soundtrack.
I like after after he gets across the chasm and he finds the guy stuck through with the stakes and the idols on the ground. He says, "Adios, estupido." I don't think this is 100% translated, but okay. See ya, sucker.
That's funny. Hey, by the way, I do want to say I have one more thought on the man from Aleppo here. Because I was just thinking, there's like a crime or something. And guys, can you describe the criminal? He was wearing yellow. Oh,
shouldn't be that hard to spot. Yeah. Yeah. You sure it wasn't green? No.
Oh.
All right.
Blue, no, yellow.
Quick shout out to the chat room. We got Michael King, who just joined. Clinton was on earlier. I think he's still around. John Miller Jr., of course, you and me. And who do you see? Do you see anyone else?
That's all I see. Wow.
Okay.
Really bad in 1,000 tonight.
Well, it is Grammys night or something, I think. There's a lot of people who get into that sort of thing. And if you want, you can watch us live. If you want to catch us on the... If you want to catch us on the podcast later that comes out on Wednesday, or actually Tuesday night, technically, depending on where you are, you can watch us live if you put your notifications, subscribe to the Technorama podcast page on YouTube, not YouTube, Facebook. Facebook, that's the one. Facebook, and you'll get an alert when we go live. So it'll say, "Hey, Technorama podcast is live." We stream live Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time, although there's been a lot of holidays and PTO and business trips that have come in and just train wrecked our schedule. In fact, the next one we'll be able to do is February 17th. It's a bit of
really?
I can't do it next weekend. We're going to be on another cruise. And then we get back. There won't be any time to prepare for the show. I think we get back Sunday, right? Saturday or Sunday. Yeah. So, then it's going to be the week after that. So,
we'll do the best we can.
We do the best we can, and we appreciate you joining us, and we appreciate you being here. Let's do a Remember When. I think I have some Remember When music. I do. Hey, the history of reading. So this is an article
I thought this was an interesting story, by the way.
I did too. So the beginning of silent reading changed Westerners' interior life. People think of reading as an introvert's hobby, a quiet activity for a person who likes quiet, save for the voices in their head, which are many in my head. But in the 5,000 or so years humans have been writing, reading is, as we conceive it, as a social activity with a book, is a relatively new form of leisure. For centuries, Europeans who could read did so aloud. The ancient Greeks read their text aloud, so did the monks of Europe's Dark Ages. But by the 17th century, reading society in Europe had changed drastically. Text technologies like movable type, not that blog software.
I was going to say, what?
And the rise of vernacular writing helped usher in a practice we cherish today. Taking in words without saying them aloud, letting them build a world in our heads. Among scholars, there is a surprisingly fierce debate around when European society transitioned from mostly reading aloud to mostly reading silently. Some even say the ancients read silently just as much as they read aloud, but there is one scene in literature they agree is crucial. In St. Augustine's Confessions, the titular professor, describes the reading habits of Ambrose, the Bishop of Milan. But when Ambrose used to read, his eyes were drawn through the pages while his heart searched for the meaning. However, his voice and tongue were quiet. See, I even have to read this aloud. Often when we're
Just read it silently, Chuck.
Yeah, that wouldn't make for much of a podcast, would it? Often when we were present, for anyone could approach him, and it was not his habit that visitors to be announced to him. We saw him reading in this fashion silently and never otherwise. The fact that this was so remarkable to Augustine, some scholars argue, is because in the 400s, silent reading wasn't really a thing. Other researchers say that this passage is meant more to point out Ambrose's rudeness. Quote, it's really that Ambrose would go on reading silently while he was there, like someone going on texting while you're trying to talk to them, says D. Vance Smith, a medievalist. Well, there's a title. In the Princeton English department, Augustine, surprised by his rudeness and not reading aloud, to share with him. So the question is, when did this come about and why?
Yeah, and Ambrose wasn't reading the article. He was actually looking at the pictures.
No, that's a different
magazine.
That's
what he was doing. That's what he was doing.
And he's holding it vertically like this.
Yeah. How's he holding that stone that way? No, it wouldn't be a stone tablet.
It was far easier to read quietly than it was to carve stone tablets quietly.
Anyway, I thought this was an interesting article because I never really gave it much thought, you know, because I knew people read aloud and read silently.
Right.
Didn't really think that there was a history of people reading out loud only.
Can you imagine trying to fall asleep in bed and your partner sitting there reading loud?
Shut up. Yeah. Just pretend you're saying the words.
Then he put his hands between her reading. Whoa, slow down. Go read quietly to yourself, please.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting thing. That's why I threw it in here.
It is. Thank you very much. And thank you to our patrons. We have patron music somewhere. There it is. Oh, yeah. Thank you, patrons. Your donations are greatly appreciated. And the cool thing is you only pay when we do a show, like now. So this would be like the only thing you pay for in July. Thank you. January. Where am I going? I don't even know what day it is. Good thing Donna's here. Keep me honest. She'll make an honest man out of me one of these days.
Maybe.
Let's go through the roll call now that we have a nice grid of 20 again. Kyle Nishioka, thank you very much.
My OCD's good.
Yeah, somebody please come along and donate so we can make a table of 21 and just throw Craig's OCD out the window again. Right. Kyle Nishioka, thank you very much, a.k.a. Mad Marv, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, thank you, Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
That John, No, not that John
Noble. Yes, that John Noble. Our John Noble. Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therrien, Jurgis Rowan, John Miller Jr., Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry, the return of Amy Bowen. I can put it that way.
Return.
And our newest, greatest patron, Denise Inglis. I'm hoping I'm saying that right. I-N-G-L-I-S.
Welcome.
Thank you and welcome. We appreciate all of you very, very much, because without wonderful contributors like this, the show would eventually, well, how does Michael Butler say it? Die a horrible, putrid, stench-filled death.
I think that's pretty accurate.
Those of you who are rock and roll geek fans know what I'm talking about. He says it every week and he rattles it off so seamlessly. It's funny. If you would like to throw Craig's OCD for a loop, go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And for as little as a dollar a show, you can be enshrined on this show with your name. And we have postcards that I still need to send out from the cruise. We've got them signed. I just need to address them and stamp them.
Yep.
So we're looking for the addresses of... did we get everybody's address yet, Craig? I think we got a few.
I think we got most of everybody. But we'll follow up on that. I've only got a couple. I think maybe one or so we haven't gotten yet.
All right. I will do my best to get the postcards out of here this week before the next cruise comes up. Otherwise, it's going to be mid-February before I can get these things on the road. And I don't want to have to wait any longer. We were supposed to be having a Christmas gift for you. But wow, this song really starts to take off, doesn't it?
I know. I have it in my rotation. I just play every once in a while.
You gotta let it play out. It's got 30 seconds more to go. Let's just roll right into the question of the week. Our question of the week is, if you had a $200 million budget, and copyright was not an issue, what movie would you make?
Ooh.
Good question. Big finish.
Baseball's the sequel.
History of the World Part 2.
Yeah.
We're both on the Mel Brooks wagon, so why not? What would you do with $200 million of a movie budget? Now, you got to make a movie. You can't just take the $200 million and do whatever else you want. So that is our question of the week. We will post that to the social media networks sometime before the next show gets going and see what the responses are. I'm curious to see what people come up with. Anybody in the chat room say anything? Nada yet. Clinton says, is he dressed?
Woo!
Clinton says he's either going to look like the man in the yellow hat or a giant banana. Talking about that yellow man from Aleppo.
Yeah. What's that accent sound like?
I sense a song title in there somewhere. He's the yellow man from Aleppo. I can't think of anything.
He wore it hard on a sleeve.
Can't think of anything that rhymes with Aleppo.
John Miller Jr. says he would redo the Transformers, the movie. The one where Optimus Prime died.
Let's make another Spider-Man.
Yeah. Let's make five of them at once and just get it out of our system.
Friday the 13th. 153, 54, and 57. We'll skip 55 and 6. They weren't worth making.
I want to see some more Freddy Krueger.
Oh, man. That's a tough one. Could you take any TV shows and make them a movie?
Sure.
The IT Crowd, the movie.
Alf. I want to say Alf, the movie.
Hey, if I'm going to invest $200 million, I want to get at least $200 back. I don't think Alf is going to cut it for me.
What if I did an Alf Indiana Jones crossover? How would that work? Well, he kind of fit in with the aliens in the last one.
Are there cats?
Right.
Make sure there's lots of cats. All righty. That brings us to the end of the show. Somehow we got here. I'm not sure what happened.
Let's get out of here before we offend anybody.
Please go over to our page at Technorama Podcast, checkchat.com/Technorama, and you will find all our contact information, including our listener line. We haven't heard from any of you, many of you, all of you, at 707-530-2428, 707-530-CHAT.
in a long, long time. We'd love to hear from you again. You can send us an email. That's another way to let us know about your $200 million idea, your $200 movie. That would work, too.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you do for a $200 movie?
And all of our social media account over there. Thank you very much. Thank you to people who send us ideas, interact with us on the pages, all that good stuff. We've got another, we've started out another year, Craig, 2019.
Yeah, and you can see that it was well worth taking the time off.
Give me a binary high five. Let's get out of here.
All right. 101.